Up next, the energy buzzword of the moment, the smart grid. Maybe you've heard President Obama mention it.
But we'll also do more to retrofit America for a global economy. That means updating the way we get our electricity by starting to build a new smart grid that will save us money, protect our power sources from blackout or attack, and deliver clean, alternative forms of energy to every corner of our nation.
That's from a speech the president gave on the economy in January. And many energy experts agree with him, saying that our electric grid is really too old to meet 21st century needs. But how do you make a smart grid? What does it mean to be a smart grid? Does that mean building hundreds of miles of new power lines to transplant or transport wind energy from the Great Plains, or installing better electric meters on everybody's house, or maybe something else? That's what we're going to be talking about. Our number is 1-800-989-8255 if you'd like to talk about it with us. Or you can Twitter with us at SciFry. And in Second Life, there's a whole group of folks out there who are going to be joining us to ask questions if you'd like to join them in Second Life on Science Friday Island. My guests, Kurt Yeager is Executive Director of the Galvan Electricity Initiative in California, also co-chair of Senator McCain's California Energy Security Coalition during the campaign. He joins us by phone. Welcome to Science Friday, Dr. Yeager.
Thank you very much. It's great to be with you.
Any relations to Chuck Yeager?
No, he hasn't sent me any checks recently, but we were in the Air Force at the same time.
That's very interesting. You get that asked all the time, I'm sure, in California.
Yes, I do. I was known as Chuck when I was in the Air Force, but there were quite a few ranks between the real Chuck and me.
Yeah, I guess just a few. Just a few with an eagle and a star there between. Dan Kamen is a professor of energy at the University of California, Berkeley, and director of the Renewable and Appropriate Energy Laboratory. He's also senior advisor. He was senior advisor to the Obama campaign on energy and environmental policy. Welcome back to Science Friday. Good to talk to you, Dan.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me back on.
Is the president up to date, up to speed on the smart grid idea?
Well, I think he's as up-to-date as anybody else is, because I think if you ask 20 experts, you'd probably get 30 opinions of what smart grid mean. And it doesn't mean anybody's wrong. It means that it's got a whole bunch of meanings, from a very clever system to autonomously route power and look for faults, and also a system that allows individual homeowners to interact with the grid as if it's the big eBay of energy. So it's supposed to be a lot of different things. And so I think the president is right on the money that it needs to do a lot.
What does it need to do in your mind?
Well, it's really the two ends of the spectrum. I mean, at one level, you want a grid that is able to bring us large amounts of clean energy from the sources that we're now discovering we could really tap, solar and wind and things. So it means going to new places, being resilient to heat, being something that can detect faults and gaps and reroute power quickly on its own. But on the other end of the spectrum, it also means a very distributed, kind of the anti-version of that, where
the
grid allows you to do things from home to home.
All right, Dan, we'll have to break in. We'll all come back and talk more about the grid, what a smart grid means. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Science Friday on NPR. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with Kurt Yeager and Daniel Kamen about the new smart grid. Want to do a special shout-out to Second Life, folks attending the Second Life Stepping Into Science Conference, joining us in Second Life today. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Dan, did you have more to talk about the smart grid while I rudely interrupted you?
No, it's fine. I think actually that's really the range. I mean, it's designed to be the big superhighway of power, ideally a lot of clean power, but power overall. But also the other end of the spectrum is if someone has a solar panel on their roof like I do, or someone has a fuel cell in the basement, we'll often upload that power from a given home and step it up to transformers all the way to the big lines, and it could come down at your neighbor's house. And so in some sense, you'd like to be able to make smart decisions about routing power based on demand. And so it really is a grid kind of with the brains of cell phones and neural networks and things built into it. But it means a lot of different things.
Kurt Yeager, does that mean the same thing to you?
Well, I think we can simplify it. Like all things, words tend to get used to serve special interests. Smart grid is exactly the definition in the dictionary. It is a grid that is able to quickly learn from experience and adapt accordingly. It is simply the overlay of an electronic control system and real-time telecommunications over the existing infrastructure. It is not about stretching new lines or new hardware of that sort. It is very much about bringing electricity into the digital age. And it is really, to me, the ultimate irony that electricity that enables the whole digital economy and transformation is the last legacy of an industry that is totally controlled by an electromechanical system. So our system today is kind of the ultimately dumb system. It is not able to learn from experience and adapt accordingly. It is not able to operate at the speed of light, which electricity flows at. So it means we effectively have very little control over the power system.
Mm-hmm. So it
also allows us to integrate supply and demand. The system we have today was literally designed in the first half of the 20th century to electrify the country. Today, our goal must be to optimize the supply and demand of electricity and to give consumers much more control over their destiny in this. Rather than being held captive to the system, they should be partners. And so the intelligence, the smarts, must be shared with consumers, and they must bring their smarts to the table.
So you're separating what Dan is saying. Dan is saying the smart grid is a new grid. It's an expanded grid. You're saying the smart grid is the same grid we have, but just bringing it up to date.
It is bringing it up to date electronically.
Right.
And it is certainly the opportunity to bring in new technologies, renewable energy. Today, the use of clean, renewable energy is fundamentally limited by the dumb grid. The clean energy portfolios that states are passing, frankly, aren't worth the paper they're written on in today's power grid, because the power grid cannot reliably or cost-effectively include any of that or very much of that new generation. So the intelligence here is fundamental not only to our economy and to our energy future, but also to our environmental future.
Speaking of that, Dan, can the current grid manage increasing renewables like wind in the Dakotas or solar thermal that might be out in the Southwest?
Well, the simple answer is no, because the grid simply doesn't go to many of the places where you might ideally like to build those new power plants. I mean, it's not surprising because we built the grid around the power plants in the cities that we had. We didn't build it necessarily to go to some of the desert areas or the high plains windy areas. So in terms of just where it's physically laid out at size, it doesn't reach those places. And it's not just how big and fat the cables are. It's also the fact that some of these new renewables are intermittent. They go on and off when nature turns them on and off. And so you need to have not just the wires, but also the smart aspect, the control, so that if you suddenly get a surge of power or a big drop, you're able to route things around. And so the grid is kind of this ultimate network toy. I mean, it's been called by some people the ultimate achievement of the past century. And Kurt is exactly right. It is an ultimate achievement, but it's one that's all sort of physical relays and clickers. It's not the kind of thing that, you know, reminds us of a brain that routes power and uses neural network systems and learning to really optimize where you send it, especially if we're going to have something which is much more responsive. And I kind of do like the grid could become the eBay, but it's got to have the brain power to make those decisions. And right now it doesn't have any of that. So it limits our ability to bring clean power into the system.
A question from Aubrey Juneberry on Second Life says, do any other countries have smart grids?
Well, they have much smarter grids. There is room for improvement everywhere. But just as a model here, almost every one of our competitors in the developed world and even in the developing world are introducing or already have in place much smarter systems than we do. We, in effect, lead the world in energy unreliability for a developed country. Mm-hmm. We measure outages in hours over the course of a year. Everybody loses power on average several hours a year. If you're in Japan, you don't lose it for more than a minute or two in the course of a whole year. And if you're in Singapore, you measure it in seconds over the course of a year. Hmm. That's just one small measure of the, if you will, the stupidity of the system that we have today.
Well, our system is also centralized. Would a smart grid, Kurt, be better to decentralize it so that the different areas of the country won't be blacked out when one other part goes out?
Well, absolutely. Well, let's divide that question into two pieces here. One, a smart grid is one that is able to self-correct or self-heal itself instantaneously at the speed of light. The system detects a problem before it occurs and corrects accordingly. That is not possible today. So if you have a very small local outage, it can often magnify itself and cascade over a whole state or a whole region. We recall the big Northeast blackout back in 2003. That really came from a relatively minor incident in Ohio that cascaded because the system could not control itself. But the second part, and I think very important, is the ability to introduce what is known as distributed power, this seamless integration of the supply and the demand side of the system, eliminating what I call the iron curtain of the electricity meter today, and intend providing a seamless connection of supply and demand with a smart grid, allows us to use distributed generation sources to augment the power bulk power system. So if the bulk power system for any reason does go down, the system can self-island itself and use distributed power in that to fill the gap. And even more importantly, I believe this is where we're going to see the big breakthroughs in clean, renewable energy. The idea of converting our buildings from what might be called power pigs today to power plants. Net zero energy buildings is a reality that's being done in many parts of the world. The building produces as much energy as it consumes. And so photovoltaics on the roof, efficiency, smart buildings and homes that are very efficient and under the control of the tenant or owner of the building is really the way of the future. This is the real payoff of a smart grid. We will, wherever this is done, people save considerable sums of money and they use much less energy in the process. Mm.
Dan Cameron, do you agree with that definition?
Yeah, I think that's right. And what's, I think, interesting about this, this idea of turning buildings from just sinks of power, places that consume it, to generators, is that you get a lot of benefits. One is that you get this added reliability, this robustness against problems. You can island areas if there's a problem outside. But you also introduce market forces in a very useful way, because if the solar on my roof and the heat plant in another building or the wind turbine in another area are all on the grid and are essentially allowed to compete, you can do two things. One is you can bring more entrance into the game of selling power, but you can also introduce the other rules we might like. So it's not just cost per kilowatt hour. It could be cost and reliability and low carbon. So you could essentially set up bids and auctions where you're trying to reward those things. The more reliable, the more green, and low cost can all be competed in. And so you move to a system that, I do think that the eBay is an interesting analogy, but you really have to set up good rules for it. And those are all possibilities. And as Kurt said, we're already seeing bits of this here and there. There's some local experiments, and Europe is working on a system now. Japan has it. It also opens the promise for a lot of developing country communities that may never get the centralized grid in the ways we're describing for a long time, but could begin to build regional ones around cities or around there's one in Kenya that's being built around a beer factory because they have excess power when they're not brewing, and so they use that and they sell in the local area. And so these technologies can be very low cost.
Does that mean we don't need to invent anything new? Maybe superconductors transmission lines or things like that?
We can certainly do a huge amount today by marrying what we know about electronics with essentially the hardware and the smarts in the new information technology. I mean, a lot of the chips and a lot of the things in your cell phone go a long way, but not the whole way. There's real questions that are going to be faced by the current administration about some of the questions like, should we be installing big DC lines that are essentially very efficient for transporting power long distance, but it's expensive to get power on and off. So if you want to bring power, say, 1,000 miles from really rich wind or solar areas into metropolitan areas. Do you go with that route with some amount of controls, or do you really try to build something that looks more like today's system? We need a good deal of better power electronics, better switching, a lot of the smarts to, as Kurt said, to sense a lot of these problems. A great deal of the downtime we get in our grid is because it was slow to react and you block out a whole area, as opposed to having the grid sense it and say, well, let's avoid that area and let's get in there and fix it.
Is there money, I'll ask both of you, is there money in the new stimulus package to bring all of this about?
Well, not all of it, but there's a good start. There's about $11 billion in there, which some people say is just a bit of a down payment, but because this is really the first big push to get smart grid going, it can hopefully be used well to set up a number of tests to develop some of the hardware. And because we've known for a long time that we're going to need to invest in the grid, hopefully this is don't let a good crisis go to waste. We can use this to start that process. But in time, we're likely to need a great deal of money, and the estimates now range from $200 billion to $400 billion or more to really make the grid widely smart. But the local consumers and producers benefit. So there's really a distributed benefit, like having more internet connections.
Kurt, want to jump in?
Yeah, I'd like to underscore that the cost here, this is not a situation that requires a bailout. We may require a leading hand from the federal level, because the system today is primarily regulated at the state level. And the regulations today at the state level still reward utilities, the people who own and operate the power system, primarily for how much electricity they sell. There is not an incentive today in their compensation, if you will, for efficiency and reliability, and therein lies the fundamental problem. So the federal level really has to step in, almost as we did in the Interstate Highway Act back in the 1950s, and say, look, we'll put in some seed money to help here, but the savings are so immense, the societal benefits are so great, that you need to take leadership in raising the performance bar on your system. We are working with a number of communities in different states who, as communities, are prepared to have bond issues to help raise the quality of power, because it's costing them jobs. Companies are leaving their communities because the power service is so poor. So we talk about $200 billion or more dollars to fix the grid. That's true. But we will save, it's costing us today over $1 trillion a year as a nation. And everyone who is a citizen in this nation is paying for that bill in the costs of goods and services, in lost jobs, in lost productivity, and lost competitiveness.
All right. We're talking about the smart grid this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. I'm Ira Flatow, talking with Kurt Yeager and Daniel Kamen. Just a couple of minutes to go before we got to go to the break. Where would you start, Dan? Where would you start on this giant project?
Well, I think you want to start with getting some good ground rules in play. And we've already got a couple that sort of help to deal with some of the issues. A number of states have done something to decouple the total sales of electricity from the revenues for the big utilities, which sounds a little bit counterintuitive, but what it basically says is you as a utility forecast your sales, and if you sell more power than that, you get the same amount of money. You just get paid less per kilowatt hour. If you sell less, you get paid more per kilowatt hour. That's a rule that encourages, incentivizes efficiency. We could be setting up rules that encourage reliability and that essentially, say, buy efficiency and low carbon sources first. And those rules, if applied to utilities and the grid operators, which are sometimes the same but not always, start you off in this way. And I would certainly also want to see a couple regional experiments at the city scale, at the larger scale, to figure out which are the really critically missing pieces of the technology by demonstrating it, and then really incentivize that and some of this new spending.
Kurt, I got about a minute. Are there experiments going on now?
Yes, there are a number of experiments. Of course, Boulder, Colorado is a community that gets a good deal of attention. Austin, Texas, smaller communities. We just completed the transformation of the campus of the Illinois Institute of Technology to what we call a perfect power microgrid, and that has received a substantial Department of Energy grant to accelerate it because it's a model for doing it on a national basis. And I would point out here, again, I think we're both saying that while this interstate transport, and if you will, a national superhighway system for electricity is useful, it is only useful in the context if we transform the local system. Otherwise, we have an interstate highway system dumping the electricity into communities whose power system is the equivalent of a dirt road, one path, one direction, without any traffic signals. Would be the ultimate in gridlock. So we really have to focus on the local areas, and of course that means the federal government has to challenge in some cases a little bit of states' rights here, which is a difficult political problem, but one which I think the federal government, if they're really serious about this transformation and its critical nature for the sustainability of our country, have to say in that states' rights are great, but not when they interfere with the national good.
All right, that's going to be a challenge, getting, you know, the out of the not-in-my-backyard syndrome challenged in states. Gentlemen, I want to thank both of you for taking time to be with us today. Kurt Yeager is executive director of the Galvan Electricity Initiative in California, and he was also co-chair of Senator McCain's California Energy Security Coalition group during the campaign. Dan Kamen is professor of energy, University of California, Berkeley, director of the Renewable and Appropriate Energy Lab. He was also senior advisor to the Obama campaign. Thank you, gentlemen, for being with us today.
It's a pleasure. Thank
You're
you.
Welcome. We're going to take
it very much. I look forward to hearing from your listeners. We have websites, and we would love to hear from you.
All right. We have to take a break. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.